This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Dan Hurley. Later in the program, we'll hear about the exhibition Confederate Currency, The Color of Money. It's now on display at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. But first, a Washington Post analysis shows, beginning with Columbine High School in 1999, more than 187,000 children have experienced a school shooting. But school shootings are rare compared to other forms of gun violence. Almost two dozen children are shot in the United States every day. The impact of violence is changing the learning environment and spreading lasting fear among students. I'm joined today by Washington Post Enterprise reporter John Woodward Cox. His award-winning series of reports, Children and Gun Violence, examines how shootings shape the lives of young people. Mr. Cox will be in town this week for the Scripps Howard Awards and is speaking at the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber Alumni Network event, Courageous Conversations, Children and Gun Violence. Both of those events are sold out. You can join our conversation today, though, by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Well, good afternoon, John. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start out with your findings in terms of gun violence. We've talked a lot about school shootings over the past many months, but in the work that you did, you found that's not necessarily where the gun violence is happening. Is that correct?
That's right. You know, school shootings are really quite rare. They get a lot of attention, and for good reason. They are devastating to children, but they really don't represent the typical forms of gun violence that children face in this country. You know, as you mentioned, there are about two dozen kids who get shot every day in America, and very few of those happen in schools. It's just school shootings are terrifying, and you know, they do affect all of our children in a kind of a different way. But you know, gun violence is an epidemic in this country that affects kids, you know, in all sorts of different ways.
You said something that I thought was an interesting phrase. You said typical gun violence. I don't know that people think a lot about typical violence, this type of violence. Tell us, what is typical gun violence?
Well, you know, really as it relates to kids, a lot of it is just that a kid has easy access to a weapon in the home. And that actually, even in school shootings, the vast majority of school shootings are, you know, people who have guns, kids, teens who have guns from their homes or from a friend. That someone's negligence, basically an adult's negligence, has given them access to a weapon that they should not have had access to. And the same is true of shootings that happen, accidental shootings that happen inside homes, where a kid just finds their dad's, you know, gun in a sock drawer. And that's often how kids get shot. Suicide is a way that a lot of children and adults, frankly, experience gun violence. But you know, in the last count, I think it was from 2016, there were in excess of 38,000 people who'd been killed with guns in this country. And, you know, a lot of that happens in sort of targeted attacks, domestic violence, and, you know, kids are affected by all of that.
Let's talk about what you found, and we'll get a little bit more into the amount of violence and where it happens. But what did you find in terms of how kids are affected by this kind of gun violence? I know that in some areas, some neighborhoods, some parts of towns, you find that there's so much of this. Do they become immune to it, or do they react differently? What did you find when you studied how kids reacted to this type of violence?
Well, so it's definitely not, you know, what we would consider chronic violence. It's definitely not an immunity. That's sometimes how we view it, because those kids, there is, from an outsider's perspective, there is a numbing effect that takes place. But really, for people who study this, you know, those kids are affected more profoundly than a kid who experiences even a really violent act just in a single instant. You know, there can be similar symptoms, but kids who experience this stuff chronically, you know, they often experience what we call hypervigilance, and that's where they're in a state of almost constant fear, and it's almost like a subconscious fear that they, you know, even in their schools, they'll have their backs to the walls all the time. They'll perceive danger when it does not exist, and you know, the idea that we could then ask these kids to learn and to, you know, behave appropriately, and to, you know, form friendships and to just develop as a normal human being is unfair, really, because the chances that they can do that are, is just a lot harder for those kids. But, you know, even on the other end of the spectrum, so things like, you know, Sandy Hook or Columbine or Parkland, where you have children who've experienced a single moment of gun violence in an otherwise safe community, they can be affected for decades. And, you know, a lot of those symptoms are the same. It's really it's PTSD is what it is. It's not dissimilar from what we see out of combat veterans who come back from war.
You said something else that I thought was interesting. You said they always keep their backs to the wall. I mean, you mean actually very literally in that instance.
Right. Where they, you know, researchers talk about this often, who I've interviewed over the course of the year, who say that, you know, these kids often in inner cities or in environments where they are fearful that the violence they deal with in their community might spill into their school, that they will actually, you know, when they're in the hallways or in their classrooms or by their lockers, that they just position themselves so that no one is behind them. And often they can't really even explain why they're doing it. But it is something that you would see in a combat veteran who had experienced PTSD. They'll do the same things. They'll know where the exits are in the room. You know, they'll just be vigilant all the time. And that has a really profound effect, especially on a child, just to develop in a normal way.
Did you have much chance to talk to these kids about what they're feeling?
I did. So, you know, that was really everything that I did last year was I told a series of stories that were all told through the eyes of these kids. And that was, you know, I wrote about a school shooting in South Carolina where a group of first graders had been on a playground when a teenage boy pulled up and opened fire and killed one of their classmates. I spent time in Chicago. I spent time with a four-year-old boy who'd been shot in the head in Cleveland. I spent time with a group of teenage girls who had experienced the massacre in Las Vegas. And, you know, consistently, the symptoms are the same. It's you know, often it's profound loss, but that's also mixed with just deep sense of fear and a loss of security, you know, things that we all would take for granted that are nothing to us suddenly become real triggers. And those are noises, those are cars backfiring, those are doors slamming, you know, fear of strangers. And, you know, just the ability for these kids to focus at school and not be angry. They'll deal with anger that they really have a hard time identifying. You know, and my focus, the focus of a lot of my work was not on children who get shot. It was on kids who aren't legally considered victims of anything, who were just present for an act of gun violence, or maybe who lost someone in an act of gun violence.
When you talk to those children, tell me what they said to you, what they felt like, what they were experienced because they witnessed someone else being shot.
So, you know, deep sense of guilt often. You know, there was a little boy on this playground in South Carolina who was, he was one of the closest friends to the child who was killed. And this child, Carson is his name. He had jumped over the fence when this shooting started. His instinct was just to run. He jumped over the fence. And we're now 2 years after that, and he's still dealing with enormous amounts of guilt because he is convinced that if he had gone back, he could have saved his friend's life. And, you know, that's part of what makes this a trauma more significant for children, is they don't have sort of the context of 30 years of life experience. So for him, he was 7 years old at the time. He's still convinced that he could have saved him. And so he deals with enormous amounts of guilt over that. You know, another little girl who was on the playground that day, who was in love with the child who died, she has dealt with just crippling PTSD. You know, she's cut herself, you know, with her nails, and she's has these really violent outbursts, and she can't go to the school anymore because everything reminds her of what happened that day. And, you know, her experience with gun violence was 12 seconds. That was it. From when he started shooting to when it ended was 12 seconds. And it has profoundly changed her.
Did you find that a lot of the schools have counselors, have people for these kids to talk to?
You know, they do. They do. A lot of them do, although some of that depends on the community. You know, some of the urban communities, urban schools that maybe have fewer resources, they really don't have as much available for these kids as a school like Marjory Stoneman Douglas might. And, you know, some of that is a function that there is there isn't the money there. But then I think there's also just this societally, we just kind of assume that this is what these kids' lives will be like. And that's really unfair because they desperately need therapy. They desperately need counseling as much as any kid anywhere else.
Do you think they ask for it? Do they work with others, or are they just trying to deal as best they can?
You know, I think they're just trying to do the best they can. You know, some of these schools just maybe you have hundreds of kids who need counseling, and you have two therapists. And you know, often the teachers become therapists, the coaches become therapists, but they're not trained to deal with these things. And often what I have found is these kids just start to internalize. They start to try to deal with it on their own. And, you know, that is often what leads to behavioral problems years and years later, is those kids have just kept all that in. They've never talked about it. And then it spills out some other way.
Does it ever end up in a discussion of just guns in general? Certainly the nation is starting to talk about guns after the recent Florida shooting. Students there walked out over regulations on guns. Do you think in these communities where perhaps it happens more and not necessarily a school shooting, but shootings in general, that they have any thoughts about how guns are thought about in this country?
Yeah, I think, in my experience, a lot of those communities are working really hard to rid their community of guns, and they draw often a more direct line to the guns being the problem in their minds. But, you know, people often point to a place like Chicago, which has really stringent gun laws. You know, the problem with that is that they're surrounded by places that don't have those stringent gun laws. So if you're a bad actor in a place like Chicago and you want to get a gun, you can just cross the state line and get a gun. So I think, you know, these communities, they want to have, you know, areas that are free from guns. There's a lot of gun education. But, you know, in a country with 250 million plus guns, if somebody really wants one, they can get one.
As we have been talking, John, about the fact that so many issues of gun violence are not these mass shootings in schools, but rather the day-to-day gun violence situations in some neighborhoods. You talked about how sometimes these kids have trouble learning because of PTSD. What does this mean to the schools in general? Do you think that it really affects how they can do their jobs, the teachers and the administrators can do their jobs day to day?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, it you know, they know, you know, I spent a lot of time in a school in Southeast DC where a little boy's father had been killed right outside of his school. And it's a charter, it's a public charter, and it exists in that community in Southeast DC to help kids like this, to educate kids like this. But, you know, as I sat in those classrooms, you know, there were a lot of kids in front of me, not just the kid I was following, but others who clearly were dealing with things, really difficult things at home, domestic violence issues, or they had seen things in their community. And, you know, the idea that a teacher could just go in there and teach math problems, that's just not the way it works. You know, they realize that they have a lot to overcome to get a kid to a place where he or she could sit there and learn. And, you know, it just adds to what is already a really challenging job. You know, I remember in that school, they asked the kids to draw what made them sad about their neighborhood. And I remember, I'll never forget these images with, you know, crayons and markers of kids just showing people shooting each other with guns and, you know, grave sites. And, you know, these were hand-drawn by 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kids. And, you know, the idea that those kids could then show up Monday through Friday and sit there for 6 or 7 or 8 hours and learn, it's unrealistic in a lot of ways to say that they don't need a lot of treatment before they can get to that stage.
Have you found any research that shows how closely they have to be to the gun violence to have it affect them? Obviously, if it's a parent or a sibling or a close friend, you would expect them to have a reaction to that. But what about people who maybe don't see it, just sort of hear about it, or maybe know somebody at school that's experiencing mm-hmm. something like that? How does it affect them?
It's absolutely contagious. And I can give two examples. There was a study in Chicago in which the researchers found that children who lived within 10 blocks of a homicide did worse on their test scores in the week after that event. So these weren't kids who had even heard the shooting or maybe even knew the person. They just lived in proximity to it. They just heard that it had happened, and it affected how well they did on tests, in the days afterward. Another example was a kid in Birmingham. And this sort of gets to the idea of why school shootings, even though there aren't that many, are such a plague in the United States. This is a great example of that. A child in Birmingham, 12 years old, he had heard about the Parkland shooting. And then a few days after Parkland, there was a teenage girl, 18 years old, who had been shot in her classroom there in Birmingham. She'd been hit in the heart and died instantly in what we think was an accidental shooting. This 12-year-old kid heard about it. A few days later, his school went into lockdown. Someone had made a threat online saying, "I'm going to shoot up the school." So the school went into lockdown, and he and his friend, these are two sixth graders, they wrote wills saying, "If I die in my school, this is what I want to leave behind."
Unprompted.
They just assumed that, what happened in Parkland could happen to them. What had happened to this girl could happen to them. And, this was not a kid who had seen a shooting, heard about a shooting, heard a shooting. It had just been on the news and in his community, and it affected him so profoundly that he wrote a will as a sixth grader. I mean, that was, to me, just devastating.
Did you talk to him about it, about why?
I talked to his mother about it, and, she was just stricken by what had happened. And for him, it just felt like, for kids, they don't have a sense of space and time and distance. And so an event happening in Parkland, why couldn't it happen to them, especially when they're going through active shooter drills? There's millions of children in this country who go through active shooter drills. And so, why shouldn't they think it could happen to them when they're training for it to happen to them? It's a very real possibility in their mind.
What about the parents? You've talked a lot about the kids. How does this affect parents, and is there any guidance for parents on how to help their kids through these situations?
I think it's terrifying for parents because they don't know, there is no training for this, really. I think most parents grew up in a world that felt different. Certainly I did. When I went to school, we didn't have active shooter drills. I remember being in school when Columbine happened and how that sort of changed the world around me and the way I viewed it. But, parents struggle with what to say. And there is a tendency to just want your kid to get over it and to move on. And sometimes parents, if their kids aren't showing symptoms in the months immediately after these events, they just assume their kid's fine. But, the research shows that the symptoms of trauma can show up 5, 10, 15, or 20 years later after these events. And people have a really difficult time linking it back to the trauma that the kid had experienced. So, what researchers tell them often is just to be patient and that you have to talk to your kid about it if they want to talk about it, but don't assume that they are just over it, because they're usually not.
And they don't feel safe at school. I know in one of the articles I read, you talked about how a child had a gun, and when he got to school, he was questioned about why he had this gun, and he basically said, I have no intention of shooting anybody here, but I need that protection to and from school. Do their neighborhoods feel as unsafe to them as perhaps even the school?
Often that's the case. Often that is the case. And in a lot of the, what we found in a lot of the urban shootings at schools, they really were just something that had spilled in from the community. So it wasn't an event like a Parkland shooting where it was an indiscriminate shooting. Often these are cases where one kid has an issue with another kid, and he brings that gun to school and shoots that one kid. And sometimes other people get hurt because that's what happens in acts of gun violence. But typically it's a targeted event where maybe you're after a teacher or a principal or another student, but it's just an extension of what these kids are dealing with in their community at large.
How did this affect you as a reporter, just being so aware of this day in and day out for so long?
You know, it did. It definitely did. I mean, so much of the work that I do is immersing in these people's lives and these kids' lives and trying to understand what they're feeling and then conveying it in these stories. And, you know, it didn't really hit me until the day that Parkland happened. I was following some news about a school shooter in South Carolina. I was sitting at my desk and I looked up and I'm seeing children being wheeled out on gurneys in Parkland. And it really hit me hard. And I think just because I knew what thousands of kids there we're going to be facing in the months and years to come. And here we, you know, here we go again. And I know it's going to happen again. It's just a matter of time before we deal with another one of these.
You've done a lot of reporting on this and spent an awful lot of time on it. What's next? Will there be more? What do you want to focus on next?
You know, I'm going to do this for a while more. We have actually the database. We're publishing our entire database of school shootings this week, because Friday marks the anniversary of Columbine. It's the 19th anniversary of Columbine, and there's some walkouts planned. And so that morning, we're going to publish the database. And it has we've continued to search and search and search for school shootings since Columbine. And that number, which was 187,000, has continued to grow. It's going to be in excess of 200,000 when this database publishes, the number of kids who've been present at schools during a school shooting. So, you know, this is, in my mind, this is the most important thing I've ever written about. And so I'm going to stick with it for a little while longer, at least.
You mentioned the walkouts. Did you cover any of that?
I did not cover the walkouts. I was there at the big event here in D.C., and that was really a remarkable thing to witness. You know, one kid after another, after another, after another, getting up on stage from all over the country and talking about how gun violence had affected their lives. But, you know, this is a really incredible moment in this country as it relates to this issue. And it is because the kids themselves, the victims of these events, are the ones leading the discussion.
Do you think that's going to continue?
You know, I don't know. I think that these kids, especially in Parkland, the ones who are in leading this, we have to remember that they are children. I mean, they're teenagers, and they have been they have gone through an enormous act of trauma, and I'm not sure whether they've dealt with it or not. But they will have to eventually, and whether they can balance that with, you know, leading a national movement, I don't know. I really don't. But what they have to say is important, and I hope that they get the support that they need.
Do you think their PTSD from the shootings will affect that? Their ability to continue on?
There's no doubt that it will at some point, and I just hope that they are surrounded by therapists and counselors and adults who know that and know that that is coming. If it hasn't come already, there is no doubt that that will affect you know, everything about their lives, and certainly these efforts and this movement, it will affect it.
John, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. We've been talking about gun violence on Cincinnati Edition. My guest today was Washington Post Enterprise reporter John Woodrow Cox. His award-winning series of reports, Children and Gun Violence, examines how shootings shape the lives of young people.
for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.